leaders in the church. 1 Timothy 3. In their secret and public lives, the leaders of the church must be exemplary, ethically, morally, spiritually, above suspicion, pillars, bulwarks of the truth. Wherever Paul held an evangelistic effort and was used of the Spirit to raise up a group of believers, he organized a church and appointed elders to take care of it. These elders are described by two New Testament words, presbyteros, one who was born before, that is, older, and an elder, and episkopos, epi, over, skopos, see, an overseer, a superintendent. These words are used of the same person and interchangeably. Point number one, the challenge to ministry, 1 Timothy 3:1. In early New Testament times, elders or bishops were the pastors or shepherds of the churches. The word elder, meaning older, held up before the members the age and wisdom and experience and qualifications of the man, while bishop, overseer, stressed his function. The first expressed what he was, and the second described what he did. It was a good and responsible task to be the overseer, the under-shepherd of the chief shepherd over the flocks of God. A man who aspires or seeks to or longs for the office of an elder or pastor or overseer of a church is ambitious of a noble task, but he also must be called by God himself. Judas, you will remember, sought the office and was not called in the same way as the other 11 apostles. God has repeatedly shown that persons should not be encouraged into the field without unmistakable evidence that he has been called, Ellen White noted. The Lord will not entrust the burden for his flock to unqualified individuals. Those whom God calls must be men of deep experience, tried and proved. Men of sound judgment, men who will dare to reprove sin in the spirit of meekness, men who understand how to feed the flock of God. Testimonies, Volume 1, 208 and 209. As the years passed, several churches sprung up and were organized in close proximity to each other, especially in large metropolitan areas, such as Alexandria and Rome. It then became feasible for one of the elders or presbyters to be elected as superintendent of the others. The term bishop or overseer gradually came to be applied to this superintendent group, particularly in Rome. Soon after the fall of the empire, the bishop of the largest church gradually came to arrogate to himself more and more authority. When the capital of the empire was moved to Constantinople, the most responsible representative of Rome was the senior pastor, who under Justinian and other emperors were granted more and more authority. Thus it was that the Bishop of Rome grew over the centuries into the Pope. But of course, he was not so from the beginning. Part number two, qualifications of bishops or elders, 1 Timothy 3, 2-7. Paul has given some 18 criteria which must be met by such a shepherd of the flock. First, blameless, without reproach. Second, husband of one woman. Third, vigilant, temperate. Four, sober, self-restrained, master of himself. Five, good behavior, modest conduct. Six, hospitable, that is friendly and generous with his home. Seven, apt as a teacher, skilled in teaching. Eight, not given to wine. Nine, no striker or fist fighter. Ten, not greedy for filthy lucre or fond of making money. 11, patient, forbearing. 12, no brawler, combative, not pugnacious. 13, not covetous. 14, ruling or managing his home well. 15, disciplining, controlling his children with gravity, truth, dignity, good behavior. If he fails in his own home, how will he succeed in the church? 16, no novice, no new convert, lest he be lifted or puffed up with pride. 17, good, honorable report inside the church. 18, good reputation among non-believers. One is tempted to exclaim when he thinks about this, who is sufficient for these things? Scriptures certainly hold up an exalted standard for the minister of God. Part number 3. Bishops and deacons must be temperate. 1 Timothy 3, 2, 3, and 8. These two officers in the church must be sober. Means that he drinks no wine. The word in Greek indicates this. 18 years ago, the Lord led me to the home of an alcoholic. He was contemplating suicide. His name was Carl. The Holy Spirit, Dr. Lawrence Sensman, Glendale Adventist Medical Center, combined with efforts to dry him out. Mary Walsh studied the Bible with him, and I had the joy of baptizing him. Each year he sends me a card saying, 10 years sober, 12 years sober, 18 years sober. One drink, and he would be back where he was. The elder must not touch a drop of alcohol to remain sober. Paul's advice to Timothy to drink a little wine, 1 Timothy 5:23, has been picked up with glee by those who want to drink, and who think this gives them permission for moderate imbibing. Ellen White is clear in her testimony. Paul advised Timothy to take a little wine for his stomach's sake and his oft infirmities. But he meant the unfermented juice of the grape. He did not advise Timothy to take what the Lord had prohibited. Ellen White, Signs of the Times, 6th of September, 1899. Timothy's bodily needs required what pure, unfermented grape juice might supply, and Paul advised him to take a little. Spiritual leaders at home. 1 Timothy 3, 4, 5, 12, 13. We have already noted that the elder's family should be carefully disciplined and his children exemplary. Later in this chapter, Paul said practically the same things about the families of deacons. In her book, The Adventist Home, Ellen White speaks, page 31, concerning the importance of Paul's statements. The mission of the home extends beyond its own members. The Christian home is to be an object lesson, illustrating the excellency of the true principles of life. Such an illustration will be a power for good in the world. As the youth go out from such a home, the lessons they have learned are imparted. Nobler principles of life are introduced into other households, and an uplifting influence works in the community. She continues, a well-ordered, self-disciplined family tells more in behalf of Christianity than all the sermons that can be preached. Such a family gives evidence that the parents have been successful in following God's directions, and that their children will serve Him in the church. Their influence shows, for as they impart, they receive to impart again. The father and mother find helpers in their children, who give to others the instruction received in the home. The neighborhood in which they live is helped, for in it they have become enriched for time and for eternity. The whole family is engaged in the service of the Master, and by their godly example, others are inspired to be faithful and true to God in dealing with His flock, His beautiful flock. Part number 5, Qualifications of Deacons, 1 Timothy 3:8-13. The office of deacon was the first to be introduced into the Christian church after Pentecost, Acts 6:1-6. Jesus had already established the office of minister or pastor or elder or overseer. When the conflicts arose between two ethnic groups, the Jewish and the Gentile converts, the brethren got together and elected 7 deacons to take care of these matters so as to allot the pastor's time to prayer and a study in preparation for feeding the flock. The word deacon means simply servant or helper. While the first deacons served tables or the secular matters connected with running the church, they were not limited to these tasks. Stephen, the head deacon, was an educated and eloquent speaker. When called before the Sanhedrin to answer for his faith, his sermon, reasoning that Jesus was indeed the promised Messiah, was so clear and persuasive and biblical that his enemies, convinced by his logic, resorted to force, the tool of the defeated, and murdered him. Saul of Tarsus was convinced and converted by the message of Stephen, and later surrendered to Jesus to become the evangelist to the Gentile world. It's interesting to analyze Paul's early sermons. They are almost carbon copies of Stephen's sermon. There is not much said about the office of deaconess in the New Testament, but as we have noticed, Paul did have several women helpers. In Philippians 4:3, he mentions his true yoke fellow, derived from the adjective sutzugos. It has been suggested that Paul's vocative form is actually feminine and might refer to a woman whom he encourages to help in the gospel. He declares that she had labored with him. It has been suggested by the church father Clement that Paul was here referring to his wife, but these ideas have by no means been established. Summary. Paul concluded this section of his epistle by urging Timothy to comport himself worthily in the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth. He then declared, "Great is the mystery of godliness." A Bible mystery is any idea or concept which can only reach humanity through the revelation of the Holy Spirit. Paul then summarized the life and ministry of Jesus, God manifest in the flesh, the incarnation, justified in the spirit, seen of angels, the vindication, preached unto the Gentiles, believed on in the world, received up into glory, the mediation that he is carrying out now. With all this in mind, the elders, the bishops, the deacons, the deaconesses must continually minister to the church.